Welcome to The Environment Show, exploring issues and events of the planet. I'm Thomas Lally. The Environment Show is a national production made possible by the W. Alton Jones Foundation, the Packard Foundation for coverage of fisheries issues, the Bullitt Foundation, the Furthermore Division of the Kaplan Fund, and Hemmings Motor News, the Bible of the collector car hobby, 1-800-C-A-R-H-E-R-E. Your host is Peter Burley.
Thanks, Thomas. Coming up on this week's Environment Show, the holiday season is closely tied to the rhythms of the earth. Religious leaders remind us that this is a time for reflection and renewal, yet most Americans are focused on stuff, like Tickle Me Elmo dolls and Nintendo 64. But there are ways you can use less stuff. In the Earth calendar, our planet is pummeled by objects the size of the planet Mars, and seasons are created. And a nature myth from Australia where the kookaburra bird announces the very first winter solstice. These stories and more coming up on this week's Environment Show. It's the holiday season, a time when we buy gifts, send greetings, drink spirits, and eat goodies, and a time when those of us who are fortunate enough to be able to do so consume a lot, probably too much. But it's also the time when in the Northern Hemisphere we pass the shortest day of the year. James Morton, Dean of the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City, tells us the Christmas story is intertwined with creation and humankind's place in nature and the cosmos.
I think the Christian message really goes to a much earlier message, which has to do with God's creation of the earth itself. The Christian message often focuses sort of exclusively upon the birth of Christ on the 25th of December, and which obviously is core and central to the Christian message, but it's within a much broader context of the same God who is incarnate on Christmas Day. The same God is the one who created this whole show in the first place.
He says that it is the winter solstice and the sanctity of creation that leads to the celebration of the 25th of December.
And that is the most profound meaning of this season, the sanctity of creation. And then that is celebrated in the specific feast of the 25th of December, the birth of Christ, which celebrates the beauty of this creation at its sort of highest human form, in that God, who made it all, enters into human flesh, human personality, and is literally born to live among us. And that's the word Emmanuel, God with us. So it's this combination of creation and created together.
Respect for nature and the earth is a theme in much religious teaching and thought. Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat, who is the director of the Anur Institute for Islamic Studies and Arabic Language in Baltimore, and imam at the Anur Mosque, says it is a recurring theme in the Quran.
The whole issue of the earth and the nature in Islam is mentioned so many times in the Quran, over and over, to indicate to the people two things. The first, that the earth and what God has created in the earth is a sign indicate to the people the presence of Almighty Allah, God, who is the creator of the universe, and He is the one who subjected the use of the earth and the energy and the nature for the human being, for the son of Adam, in order to thank Almighty God for all of that.
In the Jewish tradition, Rabbi Daniel Swartz, Associate Director of the National Religious Partnership for the Environment, says that reverence for nature is where it all starts.
The first job that we picture God as having is as creator and as the planter of the garden. And if we are at our highest to try to imitate God's good actions, then that's what we're called to do, is to create and to tend the garden that we've been given here. At this time of year, part of what we're reminded of is how important the cycles of life are to us, how much we're a part of the environment. You know, there's sometimes this notion that humans are apart from, not a part of, nature. And here we understand, you know, especially as the days get shorter and light gets more and more precious, that, you know, the environment is where we work, where we live, where we play, where we learn, where we pray. And we can appreciate that now as we see the cycles of life, as we know, hey, it's winter, everything seems to be dying, but soon it's going to be spring, and there'll be this massive rebirth, and that the world is filled with that kind of potential.
Our Christian, Muslim, and Jewish teachers say honoring the earth and the forces of nature is a common theme. They also all decry the overconsumption or accumulation of stuff, which has become such a preoccupation for so many of us. Christian Dean James Morton says the interconnectedness of man and beast reflected in the Christmas story is the most important thing.
Remember that how the Creator chose to come into the creation, which was as an infant, as an absolutely vulnerable child, born in a stable with the axe, the ass and the ox. The whole sort of human family and animal family, natural family, together and totally interdependent upon one another. And this linkage of all aspects of creation is to me the most important thing, and the connectedness and the dependence of one aspect upon another aspect. And that seems to have been sort of wiped out with the consumer explosion, in which we're gauging and evaluating people's worth by what they spend and what they can acquire.
Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat says excessive consumption is not consistent with the teachings of Islam.
Islam consider the bounties of God on us, given to us in the earth and the nature, as a trust, and every Muslim has a responsibility to take care of that and to protect these resources to make it good of use for himself and for the humanity around, and not only for them, but also to keep it in a good shape for those who are going to come after.
Rabbi Daniel Swartz says our passion for things is wiping out the religious basis for the holidays.
We've turned Hanukkah, which is a very minor holiday, into this massive orgy of consumption, where it's very clear that what we're worshiping is not any recollection of a historical past, but stuff, you know. And it's also, I think, an indictment of what we're doing as religious bodies, how we're failing the public. I think people turn to stuff to make them happy because they're not finding that fulfillment in other parts of their lives. And if congregations were doing everything they could do in reaching people and showing people deeper meaning, I think we could offer a better answer than stuff.
And so for the Environment Show, we wish you a happy holiday. May you have time to reflect on the wonders of creation, and in honor of the earth, may you accumulate no more stuff than you really need. I'm Peter Burley. The Environment Show welcomes your comments. We received an email from Francis Etherington about last week's story on mudslides in logged areas of Oregon. One slide killed four people as they sat in their house. Etherington flew over southern Oregon last week and writes, quote, We saw literally hundreds of landslides in our short hour and a half flight. Not every clear cut had a slide, but it seemed that way sometimes. The valley's drainages were wide paths of no vegetation, muddy and debris strewn. When we turned west, following the main stem of the Umpqua River through the heart of industrial forest land, we stopped oohing and aahing and pointing at the landslides. There were too many of them. They were as far as the eye could see, and that's a long way in a plain. We saw old cuts and new cuts where their new riparian buffers ripped through with slides. In response to our Talking Green section on BGH, the growth hormone given to some cows, Gilbert Wright wrote a poem. Wright grew up on a farm in Hoosick Falls, New York, and the poem is entitled Cows, Then and Now.
In days gone by, the dairy cow was the princess of the farm, each with a personality and a certain kind of charm. Black and white, red and white, some in shades of brown, across the mighty countryside these varieties could be found. The cows were fed throughout the day with pasture, grain, and hay. Then we grabbed a milk pail and milked them twice a day. Today they have a different grain, a special kind of meal, designed to bring production up, a philosophy that's real. The cow becomes a new machine. She is a number now. She's lost her individual self and known as just a cow. A growth hormone is added to increase the product race. So if she dies 3 years too soon, she's easy to replace. A sad comment on such a beast who once was so revered. The honor that was once bestowed has all but disappeared.
We'd like to hear from you, too. Call us on our toll-free number. It's 1-888-49-GREEN. That's 1-888-49-GREEN. You can reach us by email at envshow@aol.com. That's envshow@aol.com. You can visit us via the Internet and hear The Environment Show anytime. You can also check out our Talking Green Question of the Week. It's at www.enn.com/envshow. Click on Listen to the Environment Show. That's www.enn.com/envshow. You're listening to The Environment Show, and I'm Peter Burley. Still ahead, Americans are addicted to stuff. We love acquiring it and then in short order tossing it away. We'll hear from the editor of the Use Less Stuff Journal about ways to cut down on consumption this time of year. In our Earth calendar, our planet gets pummeled by objects the size of Mars and seasons are created. And a story from Australia about how the first winter solstice came about. These stories still ahead on The Environment Show. The holidays are traditionally a time for reflection, renewal, and family gatherings. But in the past 50 years or so, consumption seems to have taken their place. When the holidays come around, we Americans stuff our faces as well as our trash cans, and the environment is a big loser. Environment Show producer Thomas Lally spoke with one person who wants us to use less stuff.
For most of us, running to the mall has become as much a part of the holidays as family gatherings and fruitcake. The urge to consume is fueled by our personal desire to acquire stuff and to savor the enticements of desperate store owners, many who make over half their income this time of year. Bob Lilienfeld is the editor of the Use Less Stuff Journal, a free publication you can get through the mail or online.
We consume an extra 20% or so of stuff every single week between Thanksgiving and New Year's, and that works out to an extra million tons of waste per week, or 5 million tons during that holiday period. And to put it a little bit more in perspective, it would be as if your family throws away an extra 100 pounds of stuff between Thanksgiving and New Year's, or about 40 pounds per person. That's a lot of extra garbage.
But consumption is blessed by society and government alike. The more stuff purchased, the better the economy. But too much consumption hurts the environment and the economy. Some economists estimate we have twice as much retail space as can be supported. Meanwhile, forests are cleared and highways built for more shopping malls and parking lots. But wait a minute. Gift-giving is an integral part of the holidays, and besides, when else are you going to get a chance to drink eggnog? Lilienfeld says don't look at him. He's not the Grinch.
We're not saying that people don't consume. We're really anti-waste, and that's a big difference. Have a nice holiday. Of course you have to buy gifts, but there are little things that we can all do that make a difference. And a lot of those things have to do with planning and being smart about how we buy and what we buy. Try to keep it as simple as possible, and things that I know that people would use and that could be reused. And what my children really want is time. So one of the things they got for me was a gift certificate to spend a whole half a day on a Saturday together doing whatever it was that they wanted to do. And those sorts of things tend to make a difference. They remember that long after that, you know, latest Barbie or whatever is gone.
Lilienfeld says recycling that Barbie only goes so far. Using and then recycling stuff takes energy for transportation, processing, and so on.
It's very simple. It goes back to the original EPA's mandate, which was three words: reduce, reuse, and recycle. And they picked those words on purpose and in order. And we've done a very good job in this country in terms of getting on the recycling bandwagon. We recycle now about 25% of our waste. But the problem is we're not going to recycle all that much more than this. We may get to 30% or so. So even though we're recycling more, we're also continuing to consume more and to throw away more. So we're really treading water. We currently throw away about 160 million tons of stuff every single year. And that's the same amount we've thrown away 5 years ago, and it's at least the same amount we're going to throw away 5 years from now. The other piece to the puzzle is the fact that the really, really large environmental issues that we face and generations down the road face, things like global warming, loss of biodiversity and habitat destruction, those things are not going to get solved primarily by recycling. Those are land use issues and those are energy-related issues. Both of those have to do with what we call source reduction, waste prevention, or simply using less stuff.
Bob Lilienfeld is the editor of the Use Less Stuff Journal. You can get it and add more stuff to your life by calling him in Ann Arbor, Michigan at area code 313-668-1690. That's 313-668-1690. Or subscribe to it online by searching on Use Less Stuff. I'm Thomas Lally. Happy holidays, everyone.
And now it's time for the Earth Calendar. We're not going to stuff either your stocking or your turkey. In fact, we've had enough stuff about stuff. We're now talking about the winter solstice, when days begin getting longer. Since the summer solstice in June, daylight has slowly been growing shorter, and now in late December, that process bottoms out. Professor Owen Gingerich is a professor at the Harvard Smithsonian Center of Astrophysics. He says that the winter solstice, the northern hemisphere, is tilted away from the sun.
At the time of winter solstice, the sun is the farthest south that it goes in the sky. This is because the Earth's axis is tilted by 23 degrees or so with respect to the orbital plane in which it goes around the sun. So at this time of year, the straight sunlight hits down along the Tropic of Capricorn in the southern hemisphere. There the sun would go overhead, and for the northern latitudes, it's the farthest to the south. Typically, it's been associated with the darkest time of year as far as those of us in the northern hemisphere are concerned. So we are now at the heart of darkness.
The lack of sunlight has had a profound effect on human societies. For thousands of years and probably longer, humans have paid close attention to the movement of the sun because it marks natural events. Professor Gingerich says the sun acts as a basic calendar marking times when rivers flood, animals migrate, and when crops are ready to plant or harvest. And when the world passes its darkest moment, societies have traditionally gathered in celebration.
It's pretty plain that Christmas essentially preempts a pagan holiday that was commemorating the solstice and has taken it over. so that Christmas is a time of thinking ahead, birth, the growth coming forward of another year. It is an appropriate time to have a great celebration with lights on trees, the same general time as Hanukkah. You have these various festivals that involve light, which are good to have in the dark part of the year.
The world would be a vastly different place if it weren't tilted. If the Earth was aligned so that its axis was perpendicular to its orbit around the Sun, there would be no seasons, and days would be all the same length. Dr. Gingrich says the tilt is caused by the Earth's tumultuous past.
So it's actually the result of collisions of planetesimals in the early stages of the formation of the planet. And probably a good-sized chunk, maybe as large as the planet Mars, came whamming into the proto-Earth early on in its history. The fragments gave rise to our moon, but the impact gave the particular spin and the angle of spin to the Earth. So it's a kind of capricious, fortuitous thing on the way in which the collisions took place early on that's created this tilt of our planet's axis and similarly the axes of the other planets.
The tilt means that in the southern hemisphere, the seasons are the exact opposite. While the north is bathed in darkness and digging in for winter, our neighbors to the south are welcoming summer. In Australia, the Aborigines have passed a story down through generations, telling about how the first winter solstice came about. It's read by Gary Ferguson, who is the author of Spirits of the Wild, the World's Great Nature Myths.
It was a time when the world was a dark, cool place, not yet bathed in the bright rays of the sun. Birds flew, kangaroos ran, people hunted and gathered their meals in the shadows, guided only by the pale light of the moon. Brolga and Emu sat on their nests under a sliver of moon, each one boasting, as those two tended to do, about how her children were the most beautiful in the land. What started as a mild squabble soon turned into a screeching frenzy, each hurling insults at the other. After one particularly nasty comment, Brolga ran over to Emu's nest, plucked one of the eggs out with her bill, and with a violent shake of her head hurled it into the sky. As chance would have it, that egg smashed right into the middle of a huge pile of sticks gathered by the sky people. On impact, it burst into flame, then grew into an enormous bonfire, lighting the world below, revealing its true beauty for the very first time. Seeing this, the sky people decided that those on Earth should have light more often, so they decided to create the cycle of night and day. From then on, each night a pile of wood was collected, and at first sign of the morning star, one of the sky people set it afire. At first, the fire burned small, bathing the world in the weak light of morning. But by midday, the entire woodpile is burning, and the land below is hot and bright. By evening, the fire calms to embers, then fades away entirely, making way for night. The trouble was that on cloudy days, no one could see the morning star. The fire went unlit, and the world below remained as it had been before, wrapped in darkness. After much discussion, the sky people solved the problem with the help of the kookaburra bird. Every morning the kookaburra sings at the top of his lungs, calling out in peals of what sounds like rollicking laughter, letting the sky people know that the time has come again to spark the pile of wood and light the world.
Gary Ferguson is the author of Spirits of the Wild, the World's Great Nature Myths. Thanks for being with us on this week's Environment Show. I'm Peter Burley. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-888-49-GREEN and ask for show number 364. The Environment Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Dr. Alan Shartok is the executive producer, Thomas Lally is producer, and Stephanie Goichman is the associate producer. The Environment Show is made possible by the W. Alton Jones Foundation, the Bullitt Foundation, the Furthermore Division of the Kaplan Fund, and the Packard Foundation for coverage of fisheries issues. Also, Hemmings Motor News, The Monthly Bible of the Old Car Hobby, 1-800-CARHERE. So long, and join us next week for the Environment Show.